Hi, Alex.
Hi there, Steve.
Well, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit about something that has me quite excited.
Yes.
And that is the fact that I'm going to be visiting Russia.
Russia.
And I'll tell you, I mean, ultimately, we learn languages. I mean, I shouldn't say we, because people have different motives for learning languages.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have said many times, I think input, you know, reading, listening is very powerful. And beyond that, it's very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just get an MP3 file in your MP3 player and you're set, right?
Yeah.
Or you pick up a book and you read it. And so you're not dependent on anyone. You don't have to find someone to talk to. You don't have to go to class. You can just do it.
Right.
But even though I'm so input-based, and I think input is powerful,
mm-hmm.
obviously we all, most of us eventually want to use the language. I mean, that's the goal, right?
Right.
And so I have been speaking more with our tutors at Link once, twice, three times a week with
mm-hmm.
my friends in St. Petersburg, or Magnitogorsk, or Moscow, or in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But now, finally, I'm going to have a chance to go to Russia.
Now, is this your first time going to Russia?
No, I visited the Soviet Union, which Russia was a part of, in 1975 and I think in 76.
Okay.
Because when my family and I were living in Japan,
mm-hmm.
On two occasions we decided to, because we had annual leave with the company that I was working for, we had
mm-hmm.
very generous, like 6 weeks of leave.
Oh, okay.
So typically I would spend sort of 2-3 weeks in Europe
mm-hmm.
and then 2-3 weeks in Canada
mm-hmm.
before going back to Japan.
Oh, okay.
Therefore, I avoided the 36 degrees, you know, summer weather in Japan.
Yeah.
So we would fly typically from the Japan seaside,
mm-hmm.
like Niigata, which
mm-hmm.
is a port and an airport, you know, from Niigata to Khabarovsk,
okay.
which is a city in, the far east of Russia.
Okay.
And then, so we were in Khabarovsk on two occasions, and then we flew from Khabarovsk to Moscow.
Okay.
And then on one occasion, we went from Moscow to Leningrad in those days,
mm-hmm.
and the other occasion, we went from Moscow to Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took the train from Kiev to Bucharest, Romania.
Oh, okay.
And then on to Turkey, you know.
Okay.
So we were exploring.
Yeah.
But of course, in those days, A, I didn't speak Russian, and B, it was the Soviet Union.
Right.
Which was interesting, but I think it's very different now.
Mm-hmm.
Very different now.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, I mean, you had one airline. You had, wherever you were in Russia, they had one brand of beer, one brand of pop, and one brand of water. I mean, there wasn't much variety.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't very service-oriented,
mm-hmm.
let us say. Okay, they basically told you what to do and when. But now, for example, I should step back. I'm going there because I have to go to Berlin and Riga on wood-related business.
Okay.
So in Riga, I'm not very far from Russia. And
mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I'm that close to Russia, I'm going.
Yeah.
So the first challenge, I hadn't realized just how complicated it is to get a Russian visa.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just ask for a visa and get it. You have to apply. You can't apply directly with the embassy or the consulate. They have a designated company that you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You need an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
The invitation, you have to buy the invitation. The invitation is issued by this designated company.
Yeah.
They're the only ones who issue the invitations. It's not like, you know, you can find a cheaper one.
Right.
Maybe there is, but in Canada, there's just the one.
Mm-hmm.
Then I discovered I needed a visa that was valid for at least 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
My visa was going to expire in 2 months. So then I had
passport.
So I then had to get a new Canadian passport.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving next Tuesday, and I'm hoping that I get my passport back from Ottawa, from the Russian embassy via this company that I had to pay a fortune here to. So, a bit of a kerfuffle.
Yes.
However, I mean, St. Petersburg, Leningrad, it's going to be phenomenal. It's
mm-hmm.
a phenomenal city. And I've read, you know, Dostoevsky and Anna Karenina, where they go back and forth between Moscow and St. Petersburg and
mm-hmm.
stuff. So to walk around there and to take that in and to meet people. And then I'm taking a high-speed train from St. Petersburg to Moscow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it leaves at 7 in the morning. And so, I mean, it's just going to be, it's going to be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really looking forward. And I think that's the ultimate reward. When you learn a language is to have an opportunity to go to the country.
Yeah.
And that's not to stir up, the old argument with our friend Benny, but to me, to go to a country at the beginning of your language learning
mm-hmm.
is almost a waste
mm-hmm.
because you aren't going to do very well.
Mm-hmm.
It may stimulate you, it may encourage you, make you totally determined to improve,
mm-hmm.
whatever, but you're not going to achieve much. Whereas if you've put in that effort over a significant period of time of listening and reading and talking to people on the internet and learning and stuff, and you finally get to go there, and you now have, you know, you have some weapons so you can defend yourself in the language and you can use it, it's almost like a dream. Like it's unnatural. It's the ultimate goal and reward for all of it. And I'm sure you feel the same way when
exactly.
you go to Korea.
And what I was going to say is the first time I went to Korea was the winter of 2007. And I had been learning Korean formally for about 4 months at the time. Not very long. And I went there. I was there for 3 weeks. And I relied heavily upon my friends who were there. Didn't speak very much. I had some opportunities to speak. And I must say it was quite rewarding to be able to use what I had learned to that point. But more interesting than that, I went to a lot of the tourist sites and, you know, the castles and whatever, the palaces, actually. And I found them extremely boring because I didn't understand what it was about. I didn't know much about the culture at the point. I hadn't learned any history, anything like that. And I went there, I just got back, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. And this time
for
around,
the second time.
Yeah, no, this was my third time.
The
second
time
was only 5 days. So
okay.
All I did was meet with friends. But this third time around, you know, having over the course of those 3 years learned a lot more of the language, read a lot more, you know, learned more about the politics, the news, the government, and also about the history, you know, having taken courses at university on history of the Joseon Dynasty and so on and so forth. It was really stimulating to be there and actually, like, stand in these places and understand why they were significant. And it was the same places that I'd visited the first time, but it had a completely new meaning to it.
Absolutely. And I think, too, that, you know, there should be more sort of learning materials that consist of simplified history books, simplified geography books, things of interest like that, so that as you're learning the language, you can become more and more familiar with the history and the culture. But, I mean, I'm fascinated now by... I must say, it's the same with every language. When I went into French, I was fascinated by French civilization.
Yeah.
When I had my Chinese period, I was fascinated. And it is a real adventure because whether it be China for me 40 years ago or Russia, which I started 3 or 4 years ago, you're exploring something that is still relatively exotic and closed to you, unknown to you, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, an average person in the street, what do they know about Russia? They know hockey, they know, you know, Soviet Union and a few other things, right?
Yeah.
They don't know much.
Yeah.
Vodka. So all of a sudden you sort of discover that. That to me is what's so wonderful in language learning, that through the language you discover this whole world.
Yeah.
And you have now an affinity. You know, I listen to my Russian, it's like natural to me. It's almost like I don't know, not my second language, but and so then to go there and to live in the real so far it's only been, you know, online radio stations, discussions, debates, history, audiobooks, Anna Karenina, whatever it might be. Now to go there is going to be, I hope I'm not going to be disappointed. And of course we have a number of Link members who live in Russia, and we're setting up to meet with some of them there, and either we're going to walk around the park or chat or sit down and have a cup of tea or something to eat. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I wish I had the time to explore more of Russia, but 2 weeks is really, and there's not much point in going into St. Petersburg for a day and then hitting a whole bunch of other towns. I mean, I think it's better to concentrate on St. Petersburg and Moscow. I may go up to Vyborg, where there's a lady there who was my first tutor Russian at Link, and who sent me a lot of CDs and was just tremendously helpful. And and I found generally that the Russians have been very nice. Like even in terms of booking seat on the train from St. Petersburg to Moscow, it's difficult to do online. There's even companies that charge you 30% or 40% upcharge to book train tickets for you.
Wow.
And we have Eugene, who is our programmer. And I mean, I just said, I'm having trouble booking it. Can you book it? Bingo, the next day. Well, I had to send him my passport number.
Right.
It's booked and whatever. I mean, you ask people to do stuff. They're very helpful. Very, very nice. So. Yeah, I mean, you do hear stories that in Russia people are less inclined to smile at you if you walk around the street, whereas in North America people are more inclined to smile at you. But once you get beyond that to actually communicating with people, and I think people are quite warm and willing to help you and so forth. So I'm looking, and that's been my experience and my contact with all of them, really. Yeah, the people we've gotten to know through Link and stuff.
Yeah.
Very generous with their time, very helpful. So,
but I must say that
really looking forward.
Yeah, that to me is one of the really cool things about it, is that, you know, you have these opportunities to communicate with people, to establish relationships with them when you're, you know, 10,000 miles apart.
Amazing.
And you finally get a chance to meet them. You know,
It's amazing.
There's no
that's
other
the
word
world
for
we
it.
Live in. That's the world. And that's, we always get back to this theme, and that's why I think, you know, in fact, you know, I did a video this morning in French about this Claude Agege, who's a French linguist in the sense of a linguistics guy who's constantly fighting the battle against the encroachment of English on French and all this sort of stuff. And it is true. Like, I agree that, you know, we should all learn to speak more languages. Although, at the same time, it is very useful to have one common language. It needn't be English. It could be anything. But that there is a common language is useful.
Yeah.
However, for many English speakers, it becomes an obstacle that prevents them from learning other languages, which is really sad. And nowadays, you know, I see, rather than English becoming more and more dominant, I think English is there, but it can become easier to learn other languages. Because there's so much available content. You can make friends. You can have exchanges via Skype. So the opportunities for language learning are just exploding.
Yeah.
And we like to think that Link's a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can all make friends all over the world and go and visit each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks
Thank you for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.